Welcome to Get Over It, Intuitive Transformation Radio for Exceptional 21st Century Living. We have a very interesting show tonight on dreams. Johnson Miller's with us, and he's going to be talking about his latest book, and that is Dream Patterns, Revealing the Hidden Patterns of Our Waking Lives. This is going to be a great informational show, so get some pen and paper, sit back, take some notes, and let's delve into some dreams. Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you break through the blocks and release energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you release your BS that is holding you back. But the big question is, are you really ready to? And by the way, folks, BS is belief system. A bit about me for my new listeners, intuitive since birth. I'm a third-generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience helping people break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing information which enables you to become a master builder of your life. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I am the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I authored Getting Your Eminence, the Men and Money book, and Masterful Choices, the Key to Easy, Effective Change. I provide consultations and healings regarding relationships, business, career, money, and love that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your life to the fullest. My clients say that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence. But they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist. So whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. To find out more about me and the services I offer, go to my website, MoniqueChapman.com. I invite you to like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. You can also sign up for my opt-in newsletter, Intuitive Living, from my website. That's MoniqueChapman.com. In this practical and fascinating guide, Johnson Miller teaches us how to discard the fluff and instead recognize crucial dream patterns. The reader is walked through the steps of dream interpretation from recalling to recording to analyzing. Filled with helpful tips and in-depth explanations, readers will discover hidden patterns in their dreams. And unlike other books, the reader learns what this information might mean for their psyche and how to apply this knowledge to their waking lives. Johnson Miller has practiced dream interpretation for over 25 years. He is a professor of history at Drexel University in Philadelphia. He earned an interdisciplinary PhD in history, politics, and sociology of science and technology. His scholarly interests include American history, ethnic and national identity, war, and questions about technology. His more personal interests include genealogy, mythology, language, and religion. And he lives with his partner in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. Now you can check him out on his WordPress site, and that is johnsonmiller.wordpress.com. Now, johnsonmiller.wordpress.com. Welcome, Johnson.
Hi, Monique. Thanks so much for having me on.
Hey, it's great to have you on. Thanks so much for writing this book. You know, as of late, I've had a lot of folks on talking about their books and dreams and dream interpretation, but your book really has a different slant. And with your vast background on so many different areas, it's almost like we're brother and sister. we just meld together. So thanks so much. How did you come about writing this particular book in this particular manner?
Well, interested in my dreams since I was a kid. You know, they're just these bizarre things, right? And I was always interested in bizarre things, and nothing's weirder than our dreams. So I would try interpreting my dreams when I was a kid, and always really, into teenager up into early adult, and I always really struggled with it because the typical dream dictionary approach would, you know, sometimes you'd get a good hit and something would make sense. And sometimes things would just be obvious. You didn't need a dream dictionary. But that sort of approach generally just created sort of chaos and noise. And it wasn't until I realized that I could get through the noise by looking at the long-term patterns, like recurring images, themes, characters, settings, and so forth in my dreams, that I realized I could use that to identify patterns in my waking life, to connect the patterns in the dream life to the patterns in the waking life, patterns my waking life often wasn't even aware of, and then I could create, if those were unhelpful patterns, I could create changes in my life. And I had some really powerful experiences with that, some really substantial changes in my life. And then one day I was looking through at a bookstore, all these books on the shelves about dream interpretation, and I said to my partner, you know, I think I got something to contribute here. And she said, well, you should write the book. So I went ahead and wrote up the approach that I had been taking myself for so many years.
Well, it's definitely very different. Now, how for the listener who hasn't quite yet gone out to buy the book, and books, it's available everywhere, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million. If you walk into the bookstore, don't see it, ask for it, they'll order it for you. So for the folks who haven't quite had the opportunity yet to delve into the material of your book, how does your book differ from the dream book or the book that says, well, you know, just track your dreams and you'll have the answer?
Like most things in life, what you get out of studying your dreams will depend on how much you put into it. And the typical dream dictionary approach, it doesn't really require much. A few weeks ago, I was at a bookstore. I was blown away. I opened up a dream dictionary, and it had an entry for gardenias. If you have gardenias in your dreams, it means something about your love life. I forget what it said about your love life. Now, that's really specific. And who knows, maybe the person who wrote that up, it really did mean that for them. That seemed rather too specific to be telling general audience. And the reason these approaches tend not to work so well is because there's so much noise that goes into making up our dreams, so many random things, and then just bodily sensations. I mean, many things go into making it up. And so what you need is some technique to cut through the noise. So I think what makes my approach different is by emphasizing not just studying individual dreams or even individual elements within the dreams, the way other approaches often do, but to collect dreams and over a long time, go back through and catalog recurring, I use who, what, where, when, why, and how. You know, the who, what characters, what locations, what themes appear in these dreams over and over again, create a systematic report identifying these and how frequently they occur, and then understand the constellation of patterns involved, connect that to the patterns in your waking life, patterns you might not be aware of yet. And so by emphasizing the long-term patterns, we can cut through all the noise, all the randomness, and get down to the things that actually really matter. Because the things that are going to pop up in our dreams and repeatedly, those are things that are important to us one way or another. Either it's just, you know, things we bump into a lot, people in our lives, or it's some emotionally powerful thing that just keeps pushing up against us that we might not even be aware of. You know, it could be an anxiety, fear, unresolved relationship issues. And if those keep pushing in there, clearly there's something that's important. If they keep popping up in our dreams, then we need to deal with it.
Okay, so you talk about the recurring dream, but what if you feel you don't have recurring dreams?
Yeah, I would say journal more. So it's not necessarily, use the term recurring dream. Now, a recurring dream, it's not, this is an important distinction. Recurring dreams are often the same dream occurring over and over again. And that is a really good example of these long-term dream patterns I talk about. But it can be more than that. How about I give an example of a dream pattern from my own life? So when I was, I guess in my late teens, this is when I really started to get on the idea of looking for these long-term patterns. I kept having these dreams about frightening animals. So if they had big exaggerated teeth, you know, just dogs and cats and owls, you know, whatever, that were threatening. And it didn't make sense to me because I'm great with animals, and, you know, I'd walk through the neighborhood and dogs would just come line up behind me. You know, I get along with them really well. It didn't make sense that I'd have these really dreams about fear and anxiety associated with these animals. So clearly the animals were standing in for something, and these kept recurring. It'd be a totally different dream each time, but that recurring element of a threatening animal with exaggerated, frightening features like fangs. And I thought I was, you know, happy and fine. Everything was going great. But by looking at this recurring element of dreams, I realized there has to be something there driving this. So just throughout my daily life, I would just practice, your basic self-awareness throughout the day, and then I would notice, like, oh, wait, a feeling of anxiety and fear is actually occurring here, that it was subtle, and I would pay attention to where it came from, how it felt, where I was feeling it, And then I began to recognize when these were occurring and how they were responses from earlier things in my life that were no longer very useful. And mm-hmm. so when those feelings arose, I would acknowledge them, let them go. And soon those feelings of anxiety and concern began becoming less and less. And then the dreams started to change. The number of times I would have those dreams with the animals began to decrease, and eventually they just disappeared. So as the pattern in my dream life pointed me to an unrecognized pattern in my waking life, and then as I changed the pattern in my waking life, the patterns in the dreams then reflected those changes.
Okay, so when you have this so-called recurring dream, could you have it as a child over and over again, and then I guess maybe you will heal on maybe even a subconscious level, whatever that situation was, and as an adult you no longer have it, but you can still remember it?
Do you mean...
I'll give you like real life example. For me, when I was my biological mom passed away when I was 5. So from the age of 5 to 10, I had this recurring dream of being at the shore, and all these weird looking fish came on the shore, but they looked like chicken breasts. And there was a wrecking. I was in a car, and the wrecking ball was coming through the car. Now I had that, I would say, almost monthly, you know, for about 5 years. And then all of a sudden it went away. Now, I still remember the dream, and as I was explaining parts of it to you, I could literally see it, but I no longer dream that dream. So does that mean that whatever that dream meant, I've healed?
Yeah, perhaps. Simply, if it was tied to the loss of your mother, I mean, clearly there's all sorts of fear and mm-hmm. sadness and loss that would come with that, and new anxieties arise. And yeah, perhaps, you know, over time we do tend to heal from such things, at least to some extent. And so, yeah, quite possibly, as that healing occurred, the dream itself naturally faded away. It is also possible the dream could transform into new things. As we go through life, we pick up new material for constructing our dreams. Mm-hmm. And so it is possible that not necessarily recurring dreams, like you were having, but new dream patterns, you know, similar themes and types of characters appearing in our dreams. So we could sort of transform the language of it, sort of like telling, people take Shakespeare stories and they reimagine them in different time periods and different cultures and so forth. It's the same story, but telling it with different imagery. And so that could happen as well. So you'd have to pay attention to new patterns emerging to see if they're, in fact, pointing to new issues or to the same thing, or to the loss or whatever it was that provoked the initial pattern.
Okay. Now, in your book, you talk about producing a dream report. What is that, and how valuable is that to us in understanding the information that our dream is sharing with us?
Yeah, I think except for the most obvious dream patterns that might occur, something jumps right out at you, I think it's absolutely essential. Writing, you, at the beginning of the show, you said get out your pencils and paper to take notes. Well, mm-hmm. Keep that paper and pencil next to your bed, because the first thing you need to do is record the dreams that happen every morning or in the middle of the night even. You can write them down. And I give tips in the book about how to do this in a systematic way, how to recall your dreams better. But recording the individual dreams just isn't enough. That's what, you know, most of us who work with our dreams, we do that. But you need to then be going back over them again and again to find the patterns. And so what I recommend with the dream report, do this in a really systematic way, is you can perhaps do it every 2 weeks. Go back through your individual recorded dreams, and then I just make different columns. Again, who, what, where, when, why, how. So in the who column, I would list out the types of characters or individuals who appear in the dreams. And so if, say, over those 2 weeks periods, 5 times wild animals appeared, I would make a note of that. And sometimes you can group them into clusters to show a pattern you might have missed otherwise. Like if you wrote down, you know, one instance of a wolf, one of a bear, one of a tiger or something, you know, you see just individually just popping up once might not look like a pattern, but if you start to recognize, oh, group of wild animals or uniformed authority figures, whatever it happens to be, mm-hmm. You can find that those clusters, and then do the same thing for the types of settings. And you find these elements can be popping up in a whole bunch of different dreams. But then when you go back to the original dreams they came from after you've got your list, you can see how the ways that they cluster together, the context of them, the way they interact, to give you sense of what they might be pointing to in your life. And so I think it's absolutely essential to do this. You got to be systematic, and you got to actually write things down. It's like, you know, follow, doing it in like a, you know, like a scientific manner.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, folks, we're speaking with Johnson Miller. He is the author of Dream Patterns, Revealing the Hidden Patterns of Our Waking Lives. You can find the book on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, every place. Check out his website, and that's johnsonmiller.wordpress.com, johnsonmiller.wordpress.com. Johnson, why is it... Or what is the role of consciousness within our dreams, both the conscious that we're aware of and the unconscious or subconscious, which we're not necessarily aware of?
Right. Well, I think there's two really important answers to this. And the one is, the first one's the more obvious one, that when we think about our dreams, we often think about dreams as things that can reveal things that we're not aware of. And that's very important. You know, I talk about that's fundamental to the method here. That's why we would do dream analysis the way that I recommend it, to find patterns in our lives we're not aware of. And so to bring to consciousness those things we're not aware of. But there's another answer to that that I think is really important for helping us to sort out the noise in our dreams, to be able to analyze them in a productive way. When we think of dreaming, most of us will think of, like, well, you're asleep. And so not that you're, you know, you're kind of unconscious. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Many of your listeners might be aware of lucid dreaming, which lucid dreams are dreams in which you are aware of the fact that you are dreaming. And that those are really interesting dreams, because then often you can assert control over the dreams. Many people, and that sudden realization that you're dreaming is often accompanied by this feeling of ecstasy. And people often then can fly, or they can, you know, you can do whatever you want in your dreams then. They're really remarkable experiences. But there's a whole range of consciousness between that totally passive form of consciousness in which we just follow out the dream passively the way that we would watch a movie, versus being fully conscious of the fact that we're in the dream and that we can control it. The whole spectrum of consciousness in between there. And this is true of our waking lives as well. You know, sometimes we're more conscious and aware than others when we're awake. But some really interesting things happen in our dreams when there's a little bit of that, we'll just call it waking consciousness in the dream, mm-hmm. but you're not actually yet aware of the fact that you're dreaming. So I call it sublucid dreaming. Because
mm-hmm.
dreams are illogical. And so there are many dreams I've had, I have them all the time, where I'm experiencing confusion. Like for me, I'm sure your listeners will recognize this, you'll recognize this. For me, it often takes place in places involving transportation. It can be an airport or a train station where I'm wandering around trying to find my ticket, or trying to find which gate I'm supposed to go to get where I'm going, and inevitably I'm late for things, and it's all a terrible mess.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's all this confusion and frustration. And so for a while, I was trying to figure out this, what seemed to be a long-term pattern of confusion and frustration, and I could not tie it to anything in my waking life. This was the hardest dream pattern to make sense of. And then I finally figured it out, that there is the spectrum of consciousness. I was a little bit conscious, and there I am in this illogical world of dreams trying to make sense of it when it's inherently nonsensical. And so that rationally produced confusion. And so many of these dreams of confusion and being lost and so forth aren't actually dreams we should be interpreting. They're not actually saying something about our waking lives. They're more saying something about us, about the role of consciousness in our dreams. And I started to have more and more of these dreams as over the years, the more work I did with my dreams, so I was bringing more and more consciousness into my dreams, becoming less and less passive in them. And so these dreams actually, of confusion actually increased. Let me give an analogy here to help your listeners. Imagine you're outside of a building. It could be an accident or a crime or something. You're like, oh, I have to go. I don't have a cell phone. I got to go find a phone and call somebody immediately to get help. And so you go in the door, and there you see a phone, an old phone, a rotary dial phone, which is kind of weird, in what looks like a living room. You pick up the phone to try and call, and there's no dial tone.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not working. And you're frustrated and confused by this. And then you turn around and you see all this seating, and you realize you're on a stage of a play. The phone is merely a prop. Of course it doesn't work. Well, in our dreams, so much of the stuff there, they're props. Whether they're meaningful or not, they're props. And the props don't work the way they do in our waking lives. Mechanical objects, machines, cars, telephones are notorious for not quite working right in our dreams. And so as we respond to that oddness, we try to make sense of it, which produces confusion and frustration, but that's not meaningful for our analysis. So if you have lots of those dreams, you don't need to go through your life figuring out where all this confusion and chaos is, because it's just you trying to make sense of the nonsensical dream world.
Okay. Well, you know, based on everything you said, it seems like taking stock of our dreams and analyzing them could be a full-time job.
yeah, right. We only have so many dreams a day, though, right? There are so many that we remember.
Mm-hmm.
And if you work with your dreams quite a bit, you know, it's quite possible you'll be remembering two or three a day. And there's times you might remember a lot more, and you'll spend all morning writing them down. But that tends to be rare, even with people who steadily keep a dream journal. But I guess the full-time job part comes in is that when you analyze those patterns in your waking life, you then have to deal with it. Well, sometimes just recognizing the pattern is enough if it's an unhelpful pattern to make it go away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I give an example of that in the books. They could be simple things. But for the most part, you've got to work on it. And so if you really want to make a meaningful change in your life, like eliminating an unhelpful source of anxiety in your life, for example, you're going to have to work on it. You're going to have to spend, you know, throughout the day, be aware of when those feelings of anxiety come up. Like I said before, acknowledge it, let it go, or if it is an ongoing real issue, you know, you need to confront it in some way. And so, yeah, making meaningful changes in your life is, well, that's a full-time job, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, right? And so this isn't the easy method where it's like, oh, I'll just open up this book and, all right, easy answers and my life is better now. It's work.
Oh, geez, it's not like the drive-through society where you just drive through, get a dream, analyze, and keep going, huh?
Unfortunately, no.
Well, good, because, I mean, part of our reason as, you know, being here on Earth is to learn, and we don't learn by just skating along. It's, you know, really paying attention to what's going on. Now, Jason, what about the visitation dreams? And what I mean by that are dreams where a loved one has crossed over to the other side and then they come back either periodically or just once, and they're with you. How do you wrap your mind around that?
Yeah, I always get asked about this, people, because these are really important dreams to us when they happen.
Mm-hmm.
And people ask, well, is this the person really visiting me? Is this simply my desire to be with them? Am I working through grief? And I just say, yes, it can be any or all of those. I mean, there can be lots of different causes of having these sorts of dreams. And
mm-hmm.
if you keep a good record of your dreams, really pay attention to them, maybe you'll figure out what's happening there. There can be a number of things, but the important thing is pay attention to what this visit does for you. Does it help you through the grief? Great.
Mm-hmm.
Is it just simply the sheer joy of being with that loved one again? Great. Go with it. Enjoy it. Or the one thing that I'll look for is, in those dreams, does the relationship that you have with that person who's passed on, does your relationship not really match up how you viewed the relationship when that person was alive? If so, that may be a clue that there are still some unresolved things in that relationship that you just haven't, that you didn't either acknowledge or dealt with yet. And
mm-hmm.
so that can direct you to doing the sort of work that you may need to do. That person is gone, but you may still need to resolve things with that relationship. It might not be so easy to do now that they're gone, but those dreams can point you to it.
Okay. Now, what about the nightmare and the night terror? First of all, do you have a distinction between the two? And if so, what is it? And if not, how does the nightmare interact with us? Because a lot of them can be quite scary.
Yeah. Often when I hear the psychologists, sleep specialists talking about night terrors, they're often talking about the ones when, classic image of the child bolting up in bed and screaming at the top of their lungs. And there's many cases in which they often don't even remember whatever the dream was. You know, the parent comes and wakes them up and,
mm-hmm.
What's wrong? And like, I don't know, I was asleep.
Mm-hmm.
But the dreams that accompany those, as far as I know, are that can be fairly typical nightmares. And if you're obviously if you're having recurring nightmares, that's an important dream pattern to pay attention to. So often we refer to nightmares when they really provoke a strong emotional response. You know, the dreams I talked about before with the animals with exaggerated fangs didn't quite reach that threshold. I mean, there was the, you know, recognized anxiety, but it wasn't having the full sort of emotional experience of it. And so nightmares, they can often wake us up. Any emotional experience, and a powerful emotional experience in a dream can do that, even a joyful one, can wake us from the dream because the sheer power of the sensation of it simply startles us awake. And so nightmares can just be one more example of a dream pattern, clearly pointing to issues of fear, anxiety, sense of vulnerability. And so then you need to recognize where that is going in, where that's happening in your waking life. When during the day do you experience that sense of vulnerability or hopelessness or fear? I can give another example of this from my own life. I was, I guess probably in my late 20s, there was a number of things going on in my life, like serious traumas. It was a loss of a friend in a really terrible manner, other things going on in my life that were just creating a lot of difficulty, but you know, nothing, you know, out of the ordinary I couldn't really handle. But I found at that time, getting these dreams that were reaching the level of nightmare where I was being attacked by people. I was completely incapable of defending myself from them. And they were horrible dreams. And often I would wake up with the fear of them. Mm-hmm. And so it was obvious to me that it had something to do with the various losses and major issues going on in my life, but the response didn't make in the dreams didn't make sense to me because my waking life, I'm not helpless and vulnerable. There's something wrong here, so I need to look for something that I'm not aware of. And what I realized is it was triggering an old response from childhood in which I was perhaps quite vulnerable, unable to defend myself. Mm-hmm. And so I realized that the events in the present, even though they were of a totally different character, were provoking that old emotional response of helplessness. And so like during the day when those feelings would come up, I'd say, wait a minute, I'm an adult, I'm fully autonomous, there's no threat to me, I'm fine. This is not a helpful response. And again, I let it go. And then over time, the dreams changed. I started to become better able to defend myself in the dreams. They stopped being nightmares, you know, where they provoke that real fear, and then they just disappeared eventually.
Okay. Well, what about the dreams that you have when they are so real that you actually get up and look at people in your household to make sure that they're still around?
Yeah. I think the differences in the way we experience these dreams are often a reflection of how good our quality of sleep was that night and when in the night we're experiencing these dreams. We dream throughout the night, but we go through these cycles where we go, you know, our brain waves go to a certain level and so forth, and then we go into a dream state, and then we come out of it, go into a deeper sleep, or wake up, and then we'll go through these cycles, but the cycles increase in frequency with most, probably half of our dreams occurring in the last 2 hours of sleep, if you're sleeping 8 hours. And dreams can become strange and dynamic in those in those later stages. And so if you get nice long sleep where you can really let those dreams play out for a long, also the dreams become longer. The phases of sleep become, or dreaming become longer as you go on. So if you let those dreams really stretch out with really good quality sleep, those dreams can get quite dynamic and vivid, and for me often strange. And also when we wake up in the midst of a dream, more likely to remember it and to really have that stronger sense of the reality of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Our dreams tell us so much. Now, in your book, you talk about major life changes in dreams. In fact, there was a story in there, if I'm remembering correctly, about a lady who was having a bit of a time accepting menopause. So how will our major life changes create dreams for us?
So here's, typically I say don't pay attention to, individual dreams tend not to be very meaningful. They're either random stuff or they're just environmental factors coming in while we're sleeping. But when we're going through these major life changes, we can often have, it can be in a single dream or it can be a series of them, but where these individual dreams really do matter. And you can plumb the depths of their symbolism for the rest of your life. Carl Jung, the famous psychoanalyst, he referred to these as big dreams. They're dreams that are made of mythological elements. Like, there's various, he would say universal mythological elements that get put together in a variety of combinations to produce the world's myths.
Mm-hmm.
And then in these big dreams, our minds or unconscious or whatever puts these various elements together to enact a myth while we're sleeping. And these have been the most powerful dreams that I've experienced in my life, where the most vivid dream, the greatest recall of it, the most intense recall I have of a dream is from when I was about 12 years old, probably. And it was one of these big dreams. And I've been carrying this dream with me forever. So when you're going through adolescence or menopause, you're becoming a parent, new major spiritual developments or changes in your life, these are the sorts of things that can often provoke these big dreams. And Carl Jung knows, and I think he's right about this, it's in my experience, these dreams can provide you in nonverbal forms a model of how to adopt new roles in that new phase of our life. So what it means to shift from, say, childhood to adulthood, or to go into old age, or to become a parent or a grandparent. And this mythological material, it can't necessarily be put in words. I mean, you can analyze it and come up with stories and explanations, but there's always another layer to it. And it just strikes me as this most incredible gift from our dreams to be given these big dreams, these personal myths. And so, yes, a woman going through menopause and really struggling with it and had a few of these big dreams that used the mythological imagery to provide her sort of a guide for a way to enter into her new phase of her life.
Okay. Well, folks, we're speaking with Johnson Miller. He's the author of Dream Patterns, Revealing the Hidden Patterns of Our Waking Lives. And you can check out his website at johnsonmiller.wordpress.com. That's johnsonmiller.wordpress.com. Johnson, you're so much more than a dream interpreter. You're a history professor. You talk about politics, war, and genealogy and all types of things. Can we veer off our dream subject for a minute?
Sure.
Okay. So you're here in America, so you know what's going on in our political system right now.
Yep.
What is your take on the energy of the country with the huge divide that we have right now?
This is not the first time that we've had this, speaking as a historian now. Unfortunately, a lot of the climate of our politics right now reminds me of the 1850s, which is not good, right? Because
yeah.
You know what happened in the 1860s, you got the Civil War.
Right.
It was a period of this extreme division, and it was, of course, intensely geographical division. Whites, or at least especially wealthy whites in the South, I mean, eventually pushed to the point of withdrawing from the United States over the issue of race and slavery, about preserving a fundamentally white supremacist society based on slave labor. I mean, these are really fundamental issues. And one of the things historians often talk about is how the Congress became unable to compromise over issues anymore. Now, you might wonder, today, looking back, you wonder, why would you compromise over slavery, but this sense of inability to work together and to compromise is... We see that in the Congress right now, the hardening of our identities as we become polarized. And there may be some similar reasons going back to what was happening in the 1850s with this, but I think there's also new things. The way that we take in the media is different than it was back then, where we, through Facebook, you might get your news. But they use algorithms to spit at you the kind of news that they think will keep you on their
page,
their product longer.
Yeah.
And so they can make more money off of you, or so they can collect more data on you to sell information about you to data brokers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so we're isolating ourselves in how we view the world because we're simply getting such different information. And I think, like in the 1850s, really stark issues are coming out that we find really difficult to compromise over, that we say we shouldn't compromise over. And unlike, or just like the 1850s, issues of race are still fundamental to the dynamic of this polarization right now. So these, we've been through these cycles before. We've come out of them.
Right? But why do we keep going? I mean, I understand history repeats itself, but why do we keep going back, especially with the racial thing? Because it seems like we come to a point where it's never been healed. So I want that, at least in my opinion, it's never been healed. But at least we have an understanding. But it seems like we forget that understanding when people like our current person in the White House comes to power.
Yeah. There's a comedian. I'm trying to think who it was now. It was brilliant. He was being interviewed on the Daily Show back when Jon Stewart had the show, and and Stewart asked him a similar sort of question. And I forget who the comedian was, but he said, "John, we don't overcome racism. We just live. We learn to live with it. That it's this, you know, this fundamental scar in American culture." I was really shocked by the racist language that was being thrown at President Obama, and I thought, geez, I shouldn't have been this naive to think that, you know, that we were, you know, getting beyond just outright white supremacy like that. We clearly aren't. Again, we come to this fundamental issues of personal interests. Maybe we never really learned those lessons as much as it might have appeared. Maybe, you know, I don't know, white supremacists kept their mouth shut more in the past. And I think this is what I said about those fundamental issues that you can't really compromise on. Like in the 1850s, why would opponents of slavery have compromised on it? Slavery was so horrible and so fundamentally wrong, you can't, you know, just have a little bit of slavery, right? And the same thing with white supremacy. I mean, you can't just accept it. You can't compromise on it. Mm-hmm. Or so it seems, right? I mean, why should people in Congress pass laws that compromise on racism and white supremacy, right? Shouldn't we just take it on outright? But then we're also not getting things done. How do we get past that then? And boy, I hope it's not like how we got past slavery in the 1860s.
Unfortunately, I think we're going down that road, you know, and it's completely frightening. With, you know, what happened this past weekend, recording this a little early, folks. So what happened this past weekend with, the man who lives in the White House talking about, you know, you have to kneel, you can't kneel, you have to stand up and respect the flag and all that. I was like, I remember being 16, 17 years old, high school, and this is late 60s, early 70s, and, you know, the protest was on, and we weren't saluting the flag, we weren't standing up for the Pledge of Allegiance, and even talked my parents into doing, you know, sitting down, and it didn't seem to be a big a deal back then as it is today.
Well, I think he's, without saying so, President Trump is deliberately evoking the white supremacy again with all this talk about the NFL. Just today, he said that NASCAR fans, they'll stand. And so notice what he's doing here. NASCAR, which is well, it's spreading across the country, but it had always been and may still be more popular in the South, and known as much whiter. Well, yes, it is a much whiter sport in terms of
It's a redneck sport, and I'm an avid NASCAR fan, have been forever. Okay.
Yes. Right. So, it is much more overwhelmingly white, and so here he is when he was speaking to in Alabama to an all-white audience, invoking "we" versus those players. You know, this was clearly an expression of white supremacy for him. How dare, you know, blacks? Well, I was going to say stand up and speak, but more, you know, kneel down and not speak. Actually, silently protest. Remember the in the protests in Ferguson? You know, there's fires and. You know, some violence and so forth, and a white commentator saying, "Hey, blacks should be using peaceful protests." And then the Black Lives Matter movement organized many peaceful protests, you know, marches and rallies and so forth. And then the same commentator saying, "Oh, they're being divisive and they're racist." And then somebody kneels silently and says nothing. And even that is too much. Well, what is somebody supposed to do? What's left? To just disappear and be silent?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what they want. Yeah.
I mean, way back when there was a movement, you know, when, again, you know, teen, and even into my 20s, you know, send them back to Africa. Well, you know what? I might be a black woman, but my roots are not African. They're from the islands. So why would I want to go back someplace I'd never been to? But it's like, you know, get away. And, you know, let's make America great again. And it's every, like turning everything back to the mid, you know, 1950s. And, you know, that story of that, it kind of looks like that movie Pleasantville before everybody got color. It's just really absurd. And, you know, you mentioned one thing. You said NASCAR, and as I said, I was or am an avid NASCAR fan. I mean, I will travel the country and go to NASCAR races. And when that man who lives in the White House said that, you know, you have to respect the flag, you can't kneel, I had said to one of my kids, I said, yeah, the next thing he'll say is that blacks can't watch NASCAR, and then, you know, the NASCAR comes out. So I guess I was an avid NASCAR fan, because I'm not going to support any organization that doesn't allow freedom to move, you know, freedom to speak, freedom to act as you see fit, as long as you're not physically harming someone else. It's amazing to me.
If I could bring all this back to dreams for a moment, all of this is producing a lot of anxiety for many people. I mean, you know, we're talking about matters of life and death here when we're talking about, you know, issues of police violence or refugees, whether they can still come to the country or not. These are life and death issues for many people. For me, it's not life or death, but there's still anxiety, and these can provoke nightmares. I've talked to so many people who've talked about since during the campaign, having, you know, dreams involving, you know, maybe, you know, Nazis marching around, and dreams provoking fears of authoritarianism or violence and so forth. So you talked about what about the energy in the country right now. Well, we're feeling this in our dreams as well. And if it's getting into our dreams, I mean, that's a real anxiety. We are really feeling this.
And as we feel it, it's not only going to provoke feelings that might come up consciously, but won't it also provoke different illnesses within people because of the stress of the dream itself, the stress of the energy?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Certainly, and produce health effects, strains in relationships. Well, you've probably seen the stories about that, divorces over politics. Now it's going to pervade into all aspects of our lives.
Wow. And if we go back and we start paying attention to the dreams, if we go back and start recording, will that help us overcome some of this anxious energy that we're experiencing right now?
Well, if nothing else, it at least forces to acknowledge how much we really are feeling this. And then how do you deal with that? So with the other examples they gave, where it was, you know, personal issues coming from relationships, childhood trauma, whatever it could be, you know, we have a sense like, oh, okay, you know, we deal with that in a sort of psychological way, in a spiritual way. Well, how do we deal with the sorts of anxieties that come with this? The anxieties might simply persist, because now we're talking about, for at least for many people, anxieties that are real. These aren't just unhelpful things being provoked from our childhood, although those can play into it as well and can amplify the effects. But we're talking about very real issues. So how do you deal with that? One way would be to get involved and organized in a way that, and I guess this would be true on whatever side of the issues you're on. Get involved, participate, organize, so that you're not just passively going along with it. Maybe paying attention to how you consume media. It's everybody, I think, I would like to see people informed and paying attention to the news, but you can also get obsessive, and it can be just taking away from other parts of your life. Continuing to socialize, be involved in social networks and with friends, community organizations, and maintaining those ties rather than retreating into oneself. I think there's a variety of things we can do to deal with these anxieties, but just like any other sort of anxiety, you know, we should deal with it while also acknowledging that there's very real issues here.
Okay, and another thing that you are very much aware of is, you know, the concept of more. I've had more and more clients within the last I don't know, 4 to 6 weeks call, and they are anxious about war because most of them have dreamed about war and war coming to their front door. What can you say around that?
Again, there's very real concerns. These are not unreasonable concerns. I mean, now most of us aren't, to understand what's going on, say, conflicts between the United States and South Korea versus, say, North Korea, there's some really complex and arcane things going on there that, you know, most of us don't understand the history of, of North Korea and so forth. And so our anxieties aren't necessarily always the best informed with these sorts of things, but they are very real. You don't have to have a PhD in international relations to listen to our president and the North Korean president talking to each other and not, you know there's something to be concerned about listening to these two.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, yeah, there are real concerns there. I'm trying to think if there's something hopeful I can.
It kind of goes back to what we were just saying, that, this information is in our psyche, whether it's through social media, the TV, or wherever, and, it just grows exponentially, and then we, oh my goodness, I don't know what to do with myself, so then we start dreaming about, because it's in our consciousness, we start dreaming about war and things like that. Now, in your book, you talk about mythological content, and you talk about mythological images in dreams. Talk to us about that.
Yeah. All right. So again, these the big dreams will be full of these, but these elements can occur in other dreams as well. I'll give an example so that people can get a sense of what these dreams are like. And again, these are the most vivid dreams, most powerful dreams in my life have been these. When I was starting into adolescence, and so making a, like I said before, the big dreams, making a big shift in my life. I had a dream in which I was in this room, tons of light, and there was a cabinet full of various crystal goblets and chalices. And there were three women standing in front of me wearing white gowns of different ages. One, probably late teens, one, for whatever reason, I thought of her as a mother, and then third, an older woman, so showing some span of ages there, which some of your listeners might recognize as the idea of the triple goddess, so the three
maiden, mother,
women,
crone.
What's that?
The maiden, the mother, and the crone.
Yes, exactly, mm-hmm. Right. And the youngest of them went to the cabinet, pulled out a crystal chalice, and handed it to me. Of course, I immediately think of the Holy Grail. And then I was transported outside. This was at my grandmother's house, where there's this giant tree I used to climb. And I stood before the tree, and hanging from a branch by its neck was this old rusty suit of armor, like a knight, and with a skeleton inside, clearly been dead for a long time, hanging there. And on the helmet were raised like on the crown of the Statue of Liberty, these solar mm-hmm. rays coming out. But next to this frightful looking skeleton was this undulating black bag, and I thought of a womb. And inside was a man nude rotating on his axis, and so I was thinking of the sun. And so you have this receiving this Holy Grail, and then seeing this death and rebirth seen outside, hanging from a tree. The tree, which in many myths is the center of the cosmos, right? And so, description, I've given some analysis of it, tying into the Holy Grail and death and rebirth, solar symbols. But I could go deeper into this for my entire life and never finish getting to the depths of what's in this. Mm-hmm. And here it was, this sign of rebirth. Here I was shifting from one phase of my life to another. And I love this dream. It's been with me for forever. Mm-hmm. Other times it can be much more sort of explicit things where I've had many dreams at important stages of my life, and particularly in my spiritual life, where some form of teacher would come and either prepare me for a journey or tell me that actually I've already taken the journey and I didn't even know it yet.
Really, where, yeah.
So these dreams, they can be these markers for inner spiritual development or major things in life, becoming a parent or becoming an adult. When these have these big dreams, generally you know it. It's not a question of is this a big dream or not, because you feel it. You talked about those very vivid dreams, you wake up and wonder if it was real. These have a different feeling altogether. They're powerful and just full of energy. They absolutely feel different. They feel powerful, like you've just been injected with some sort of force of nature.
Okay. Well, folks, there's a lot to pay attention to in your dreams. Johnson, we're coming toward the end of our time together this evening, and I do appreciate you being here. What pearls of wisdom would you have for our audience tonight regarding their dreams?
So, it's pretty practical. You got to write things down. The more you write down your dreams, the more dreams you will remember. Even if you wake up in the morning, you don't remember anything, write down in your dream journal, "I did not recall any dreams." I've written that 1,000 times. Just doing that will help you to recall your dreams. Your dreams, they're grateful. The more you pay attention to them, the more they'll reveal themselves. You got to write it down. You got to persistently go back to them and review them to look for those patterns, to cut through the noise so that you can identify the waking patterns, the patterns in your waking life, and so you can make helpful changes.
Okay, you've said it. Well, Johnson and the audience, thank you for being with me tonight as we collectively get over it and discover our dream patterns. The divine in me honors the divine in you, and I appreciate your time and attention this evening. And when you're ready to live a more balanced life, give me a call. Intuitive consultations, 30 minutes or longer, are offered at a 10% discount if you mention the radio show. Love yourself enough to make an investment in yourself and make the call. 888-240-6057. And remember, the most important choice you can make is what you choose to make important. Consider making the masterful choice of love. Abundant blessings, light, and love to all. Namaste.